Welcome to Penny Cards, Kate's Death
Podcast. You want to start that one over? No, you got to keep that in there. You got to keep it in. That's good.
Anyway, like so photography good is podcast. Really
very good.
Right there.
Not a good intro.
Yes. It's great.
Anyways, here's the podcast. We're going to talk a little bit about photography with Dave and Kiko.
Hi, everybody.
Nobody else can talk about photography.
Yeah, photography is really exciting.
If you if you take photos or ever have, you're going to love this. Even if you're just an iPhone photographer connoisseur, you're going to learn a lot.
Nikon shooters should probably turn this off right now.
Yeah.
We got nothing for you.
Sorry.
Anti-Nikon.
I don't like zooming the opposite direction, you know what I'm saying? You feel me? I know you feel me. I was just listening to a podcast where they were dissing Nikon.
I need red stripes on my lenses is what I'm saying.
I need that white glass. I mean, gold doesn't do it for me.
No.
So, photography. Let's start with
the act of photography.
How you guys both got started
using light
in photography.
Okay.
Since that's not your main thing. I mean, it was more your main thing, I guess, Dave.
It was for a while.
Yeah.
I don't think that is true anymore.
Sure.
But it's definitely a large thing.
Yeah.
Dave's way better at it than I am.
Thanks, Keeks. You've been saying that for years. And I appreciate it.
I only say it because it's true.
Well, how did you get into it, Kiko?
I don't really know how I got into it.
Did you get made to do it?
Did you take classes in school at
all? No, nothing like that. Hmm. We didn't have any classes in school.
We didn't have school.
Yeah, no school. I don't really know how I somehow ended up with a.
I mean, was it just taking pictures for your shirts, maybe?
Kinda. Not really, though.
So what was your first camera then, I'd say, if you remember it? And then, like, did you like doing it at first, or were you just like, what the fuck? And just
I didn't really get into it until my honeymoon.
All right. I was clearing my throat. I'm feeling...
We went to Tokyo, and there's a lot of stuff to photograph
okay.
over there.
Yeah.
So,
no, that makes sense.
Yeah. And I had... It was a weird little Sony digital camera. It was that... They had that line. I mean, there's only like maybe 2 years where they had this model where pretty much the entire camera was the lens. And it had a little... The body was just a little LCD screen that swiveled with the lens.
Okay.
It was really weird. It was like an L shape.
Okay.
And I had picked up one of those and was, you know, learning how to take photos. And it was only the second day we got there. So it was like the first day that we actually went out and started doing stuff. And I was still under the mindset of you don't take the shot unless you think it's right.
Yeah.
And then my wife, she's like, it's just digital. Just fucking shoot everything.
Yeah.
go crazy and you'll just delete what doesn't work. I'm like, yeah.
Yeah.
And then it was just.
We call that spray and pray.
Yeah.
And it's what you do these days.
It's what you do. That's how you take photos.
That's actually photography. It's just.
Yeah. You just hold this button down and just.
You don't let go of that button and you just keep moving. You strap it to your chest and you just go with the focus and the zoom. That's how we shoot packs.
Very sophisticated.
15 years later, we're millionaires.
So since then, I've been into it, but not...
Who got you the 20D? That was your first
first one was a 10D.
All right.
And I got that before we went back to Japan in 2005.
Okay.
And SLRs are hard.
They don't have as many automatic settings.
Yeah, going from point and shoot to SLR, that was interesting.
I remember trying.
Those photos did not turn out great.
I remember trying to read the manual.
And
being like, this is hard.
Yeah.
And then being frustrated that my point and shoot would take
way better photos.
Better photos than my like my first SLR when I had no idea what I was doing.
My $1,500.
Yeah, and I was like, why does this shoot like a really rad photo of like a macro style photo versus this shitty stock lens that came with the camera and all that, but it's priced four times as much as that digital camera. It's just, you gotta know what's happening.
You just gotta get the lens to make it.
You have to get the lens in, like.
But you, there's, if you don't know how to use a camera, a lens is not gonna help. Like, if you don't know aperture and speed and ISO and metering, and there's no amount of awesome camera that's gonna fix that.
Yeah, I remember one of the I used to shoot rock shows all the time, and one time a band told me that I was so lucky to have this camera because my photos were so good, and like in the sense that like I had this camera, man, that camera takes great pictures. You guys are assholes. Ruined it for me.
It's a lot like when someone says you compliments you on the skin in LOL that you're using at the time. It's like, thanks, I spent money.
Thanks, I made this.
And then like every time someone comes up, wow, that's a really great camera. Thanks, I bought it.
Yeah.
I don't know what to tell you. That's not actually a compliment. It's just sort of
yeah.
You should custom paint it, then it'll be a compliment.
That's not a thing.
Similar, it's like so really cool basketball shoes aren't gonna make you able to dunk. You know, it's kind of same thing. But I guess, you know, that's not exactly.
But that's
the same.
A more of a fashion thing.
Yeah.
Like someone complimenting on a tool that you have.
Well, but people do get cameras just to look, I have this cool camera also.
Who are those people?
What? Lots of people that aren't really actually good at photography but buy this expensive camera.
I mean,
Leica purchasers. How about any of those people?
$8,000
camera.
Those are sports cars.
Yeah, exactly. They just have it because, hey, look at me, I have this. People buy cameras for that reason.
It's a pretty expensive accessory.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not me. I don't know who those people are.
Yeah. So, and then you had the 10D, and then
I went from a 10D, 20D, 40D. 70D. Yeah.
Still not full frame.
No.
Gotta get there.
I'm not into photography enough to make that investment.
But you do a lot of shooting professionally.
Only 4 times a year.
Okay.
I used to do a lot more.
Yeah.
I used to do a lot more, but I just got tired of carrying it around.
Yeah. It's difficult.
Yeah. I am interested in the Micro Four Thirds, the
GH4,
the new little paradigms.
I haven't paid attention.
I know there's a small one.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really small.
They're coming with, you know, full sensor.
Oh, full sensor mirrorless type
stuff. Yeah, mirrorless stuff. Yeah. Yeah. That stuff's exciting.
Yeah, I am excited to be around for the future.
Yeah.
To see what's happening then.
There's also like a brand new one like that was on Uncreate last week.
Yeah.
It's a little point and shoot, but it's got 16 lenses built into it.
Oh, yeah. That thing's ridiculous.
I'm excited to see what it can do.
It takes multiple aperture depths, so you can actually zoom in and out of the photo and get,
and
you know, like...
It, sews it all together in one
shot. Oh, yeah. They had some really crappy cameras that did that a while ago.
Though. Right.
And you could choose the aperture that you wanted, or you could choose the depth and move kind of through it.
Mm-hmm.
But it was kind of like a conceptual thing.
Imagine all the pictures on the Penny Arcade store, and you can move in and out of the...
Yeah, I don't care about that shit. Anyway. I just care about a point and shoot that can take multiple depth and do all the work for me, and I can put it in my pocket.
Oh, I see. So you would just use one of the pictures?
Yes.
Rather than what it's actually for?
Well, no, it's actually for making one photo.
Yeah,
Not for making 3D novelty bullshit, Josh.
Whoa, look at, I'm looking at this spot. Now I'm looking at this spot. That's what it's for.
I mean...
Like you can take macro photos and see the head of the fly and then see its butt or see its head.
Whatever, Josh.
How that would be useful in capturing
it's mostly gimmicky, an
experience that would be used in a VR setting in the future.
No, they have the circular cameras for those.
Okay.
They're ridiculous.
Never mind.
I
don't want to talk about this anymore.
They have one that's really gross. It's like $300,000 or something.
I believe you.
And you get the depth thing and 360.
I like how Josh does research for every podcast.
I listen to podcasts, man. No, I just listen to podcasts about different things. One of them is about DSLRs and photography.
You are truly a man of the world.
I guess.
I appreciate what you do.
You are a renaissance
for
man.
For us.
No problem. So you never took any classes or anything?
No,
you just
never took
self-learned?
Classes. It's just self-learned, and it's very hard.
Yeah.
It's very hard to to learn.
I have a date on my tattooed on me secretly on a roll of film. It says 5/27/2003.
Mm-hmm.
I went back through the EXIF data of like the photo that I think sparked my interest in photography because I liked how it came out. It was of a bee on a mailbox in Ohio. But that was the date of that photo was taken. So I think that was monumental for like my dad bought a Olympus digital camera, which is kind of my first experience with the digital camera. And it was just a point shoot. But having everything immediately available was super great for learning. So I got to understand shutter speed because I would be taking pictures like at night driving with while my friend's driving and try to do like the cool blurry dashboard stuff by like being like, oh, what happens if I make the shutter speed 1/20 or 1/5 or something like that, and kind of doing that. So that was super helpful for a teaching tool without knowing anything besides messing around with all the switches and buttons.
Much like other activities, photography is you only learn by trial and error.
Yeah. And that's scary to me only because previously all of photography would have to be a concept until you got your film developed, right?
Yeah, because you have no idea.
It's like someone tries to explain to you what a slow shutter speed does in a dark room with like lights, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, all right. And then you just take shots right down the film, the number,
the exposure.
Do you know
anything about rangefinders?
I don't know. What?
So
perhaps I know it by something else.
So it's film, film cameras, but it's like it's what like reporters would use.
Okay.
They're called rangefinders, and they do have a tiny electronic sensor in it that will give you a light to tell you if you are underexposed or overexposed.
So it's like a meter?
It's a meter built into this film camera.
Okay.
And I had just like any photographer,
sure,
you want to investigate old stuff. And I had read about Yashica Electros. They were a pretty popular little rangefinder that a lot of people used.
Yeah.
And I was looking online to buy one, and they were still pretty expensive just because they were sort of kitschy. But I found out that my father-in-law had one in his closet buried.
Nice.
So I got his and was playing around with it, and they are fun to use because that they have built-in metering to let you know when you're completely off the rails when trying to take this photo.
Sure.
But it's still, you know, film. You got to go the hassle of getting exposed. But like you were saying, previously people had no idea how their shit would turn out.
Yeah.
And I was like, how did photography progress?
Yeah. That I have so much respect for people that came around before digital because I remember sitting on my back on my porch and just pointing my camera at the sky and looking at what changing the shutter speed did to the depth of the blues. Because obviously, the higher the shutter speed, the more the sky is actually going to come out. And it would instantly show you without even having to take the shot. Mm-hmm. So I just remember, like, that was a big connection moment for me as well. Because it's like, oh, because light's obviously coming from the sky and hitting the sky. And it's obviously going to be the most... But when it's like when the sky is the most blue in there, and if I point at anything else, it's black because everything else is, unless the sun's directly hitting it. And so that was like a big moment for me of like, oh, this is exposure. I just don't realize it yet.
Yeah. And then jumping to the SLR.
Yeah.
And you just have this little bar in the viewfinder that says, hey, this might look cool.
Yeah.
Because you don't have that live
you definitely feed. You don't have that, and there's the I think it's called chimping, is when you shoot and like look back at the screen to see how things are going. Because then you're just looking through your eye through like a instead of being filtered as if it will probably how it will probably look. So I did a bunch of experimentation. I learned a ton through that, and then I did get my first SLR, which was an XTI, and
Canon.
I was so bad for a long time with that, and I thought I was doing better, and I just not. I have so many old photos of like
did
going
it,
out
did
with
it,
skateboarders.
Did it almost make you quit?
It made me want to go back to my point and shoot for a while because I didn't understand what I was doing. I didn't make the connection between the stuff I had previously learned through the point and shoot.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I was like, maybe it's because this flash is crappy on camera and I'm shooting a lot of skateboarders at night, and like got a new flash and that wasn't very helpful at all.
No.
And I remember my breakthrough moment was when I essentially cornered a concert photographer that I was acquaintances with. And I was like, how are your photos so good? What are you doing? How are these coming out so clear? You're not even using flash and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And he was like, oh man, it's the lens. You just got to get like a nice fast, like 1.8. And I was like, what are you talking about? So I bought my first 50mm. And ever since that lens, everything became a lot more clear. I'd say that was like, if there are tiers of learning, it was like point and shoot. And then SLR came and it was like, no. And then it was like, oh, lenses. This is what different aperture and...
Well, no, the distinction, like, what is a prime?
Yeah,
what
is
a zoom?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and...
What prime, are the benefits?
Of course. And that comes with seeing what's out there and why it's out there. It's like, why is this lens $400?
Yeah, I remember learning and it's like, why would you want a prime lens?
Yeah.
These things suck. Well, you can't zoom.
Yeah.
Like, it's so dumb. And it turns out that their fucking images are crystal clear.
Yeah. And they'll shoot in a very low light situation and you can control everything that you normally couldn't because there's not a long process the light has to come through. So that was huge for me, and I shot shows all the time. And I did a bunch of trickery with the flash and long exposure, which I had learned it in like by shooting in dark
I'm
cars
still
and
learning
stuff. And
how to use a flash. That's why I say fun. You're a better photographer than me, because you know everything about light.
But I learned...
I know shit about light.
Then I cornered another concert photographer and was like, why is your shit so great? What do you use? And he's like, oh, I use off-camera flashes. And I was like, what? How? And then he linked me to an article, and then I fell into the Strobist community, which was a really, really big like Flickr-based community, which is, I guess, dating me because Flickr is super... not great anymore, but it was hot for a while.
It was good.
I had so many Flickr friends, and I was slightly Flickr.
Hey, I still have...
I was Flickr famous. Get over it.
I still
it.
Have a membership.
Yeah, you still put everything on Flickr.
Still got a lot of
I still have a lot of photos there. I never post anything.
Though. Yeah, me too.
No reason not to. It's there.
I just don't post photos really anymore, but when I was a lot, they were definitely there.
I remember the very first time. So this Sony sort of point and shoot that I was using for a long time.
Yeah.
That got me into photography. Mm-hmm. They had a bunch of little accessories, and they had like a fisheye thing that you would screw onto the front.
Yeah.
I was using a lot of that. That was cool.
Oh man.
But they had an external flash, and the first time I bounced that off the ceiling.
Yeah.
And you're like, what? Everything's evenly lit and beautiful. And
it's like when you stop using the on-camera flash straight at people, and you, because you're like, flash is dumb. It just makes everything look flat.
Yeah, no, it makes everything horrible.
And then the first time you accidentally like move it and bounce it off the ceiling or a wall, and you're like, what the fuck? I'm so good. So once I learned, I got like a cheap like strobe kit with like one umbrella and like two flashes that cost $90 each. Like they were, they're super bad. And like tethered them all through cords and everything, and like set up like my first, like just followed a tutorial shoot. And I thought it was like magazine cover quality comparatively. And like looking at it now, it was very bad.
You're
like, I was so proud of that.
I am the best.
Yeah. And so that started a long relationship with me and off-camera flashes, and this was right when I was like 19 through like 22 or so, or 19 through 23 is when I was really experimenting with lights. I guess probably 20 through 23. I was experimenting with lights, and like essentially every day I would shoot something, and I kept all my gear in the trunk of my car, which at one point was bad when I got robbed. Mm-hmm. But insurance worked out for me. I've rented a studio with four other photographers in Ohio, which was like $100 a month, which was great. And it was just a giant warehouse. And every day after work, we'd go and shoot stuff and shoot each other. And through that, we learned so much about lighting and everything. And to the point, it's just like, I can set up lights and not meter anything and just be like, have a guess, and it will be within 1 to 2 stops correct. Mm-hmm. And it's just, that's just how things are now because I've learned that. And it's so funny because I shot chimping it so long that when I got a light meter, I would always guess right before I like popped it, and I'd get like usually almost exactly right, and it'd be great. So that's a skill you can learn. You can be your own light meter. You just have to have years and years of fucking up. But I think that's kind of where my skill topped out at, was that. And then I started really messing a lot with Photoshop and manipulation and stuff, photo illustration.
What's your...
And that's kind of my favorite thing
these
days.
What's your workflow?
I shoot on a camera and then I import in Lightroom and I do exposure-based tweaks there and some simple color tweaks in there and then export to Photoshop for much harder work.
I do the same thing.
Yeah.
Except I do it, most of the edits in Lightroom.
Yeah. It depends what it is. If it's like a wedding, I will do most editing.
I stopped exporting to Photoshop.
Yeah.
And just exporting directly out of Lightroom.
That is definitely okay for a lot of photography, specifically everything at PAX, 100%.
I'm not doing portrait touch-ups or anything like that.
But when it comes to photo illustration and stuff like that, then you really need to do most of your work in Photoshop and keeping all of your shots the same and throughout layers and keeping everything non-destructive, I'd say. Obviously, you need to do that in Photoshop.
I don't do portraits. I'm very bad at telling people what to do.
Yeah.
You're good
at helping me corral the club PA members.
Right.
When we are in a large room.
But if it's something like one-on-one personal kind of thing,
yeah.
I can't handle that.
That is very scary and took me a long time. I remember the first band that asked me to do their not portraits, but just promo shots.
Yeah.
I was so nervous because I had no idea what to make them do. So I made them sit in front of a couch and act like they were playing video games, and it worked.
Oh, is that the one with the throwing the cards?
No, that was just friends and we were messing around. That was when I carried everything in my trunk and I just came over and they were playing Monopoly. He's like, let's do a Monopoly photo shoot. This dumb kid wasting time. No, that was great. That was super helpful. It's just something I wouldn't do right now. I'd be like so angry, like setting up lights. Like, why am I doing this?
How many times do people ask you to do their wedding?
Not much anymore. Because I...
Don't hang around with those people anymore.
I don't hang around with those people anymore. But I definitely had my time with weddings. And I thought I did weddings very unique. And I liked getting paid for them.
Yeah.
I didn't necessarily like doing them, but they're just like a big job that you did.
That is an amount of pressure that I do not want in my life.
And again, the first 6 or so were nightmares. And as soon as you realize you can charge a little bit more and hire an assistant, it'll save your life. Because having that additional person there for like not missing a shot is so fantastic.
I like being the second shooter at a wedding. I did a couple with a friend from high school.
Yeah.
Who's a really great wedding photographer.
Yeah.
And I just tagged along with him to a couple weddings and no pressure, just having a good time and catching weird stuff and cool stuff. But yeah, being the primary and being responsible for getting those shots.
Being alpha as fuck.
The one time that'll happen
maybe
in their lives. And if you don't get it.
You can make them redo it. They can fake it.
Yeah, totally. The reason why weddings got really, really hard for me, and it's only because I was insecure and wouldn't shoot enough natural light and would just rely on the things I knew I was good at, which was off-camera lighting and camera and like lighting manipulation. So I legitimately carried my lights on battery packs on me and would set up like as soon as the formal situation was over and we were going to do like one-on-ones, I would just set up like 2 or 3 lights and have an assistant just like lugging everything around for me. And we'd set up all these really cool things and they turned out great. But for a wedding, it's a nightmare to try to fit all of that in your 45 minutes that you have alone with the couple. there was a few couples that like let me do first looks, which was essentially shooting for hours before they were supposed to even see each other and their stuff. And that was incredible. Like, I think those turned out really great. And if you go to my website, daveallen.com, which hasn't been updated for 4 years now, there are still some cool wedding shots on there that'll kind of like explain what that kind of looks like. But for the most part, the thing that got me out of it was that one Bridezilla moment where someone was not happy with what I gave them and I was incredibly happy with it and I didn't understand why, and they lost their shit and demanded their money back. And it was truly one of the worst experiences, to where I will avoid seeing that person, not only that person, which they were like, they worked at a hair salon that I went to, but also the friend that recommended that I shoot that person's wedding.
Like, so you never found out what they didn't like?
Oh, they told me what they didn't like in their very hateful email, which I deleted and tried to forget about. But yeah, so I don't really do weddings anymore. I've only done them for friends since then that really, really wanted me to do their wedding. So I'm happy to be out of it. But I could use, you know, a bonus $2,000 in the pocket occasionally. So I do miss that.
for half a day's worth of work.
it's half a day's of shooting, but it's definitely many days of editing after that.
That's true.
I mean, at that point, there's a lot more post-processing.
Yeah, that's one thing that people don't understand, is that it doesn't. Yeah. You don't take out the SD card and then give it to them. That's not how it works.
Yeah, and I mean, luckily in this day, wedding photographers can get away without having to do like prints, which is great. Mm-hmm. And like, you can overcharge for prints and make more money with that. But like, honestly, it's worth it to just be like, and the final thing you get is the final files for you to print at any size you want. You say it in that Casey Kasem-esque tone, they're super into it.
And most of the, I mean, don't people just want to put it on their Facebook now anyway?
That's what I'm saying.
They don't give a shit about prints.
But right when I started, it wasn't that big of a deal to do that. People still wanted prints.
Yeah.
And I would just give them the option to do prints whatever size they wanted. So, weddings. Am I right, guys?
I'm glad that I don't have to shoot packs by myself anymore.
Yeah, it sounds like
you had to do that
in Australia.
Sometimes.
And it sounded like you had to puke your own blood.
It was pretty hard.
Yeah.
I'm not a young man anymore.
Shooting packs is very difficult. Yes. And if you see me at packs and I have a big 50-pound backpack on.
Shooting packs is difficult at some packs.
Yes. Okay, shooting packs prime is very difficult.
East is a dream come true.
East is great. Austin's a good time. Well, it's still pretty spread out.
Austin's pretty spread out, but not like Seattle nightmare zone.
Yeah. And we've only done one south, so we can't really judge it.
South's pretty good.
Pretty great. The satellite buildings really make things tough.
Yeah.
Cha.
That are miles away.
Yep.
From each other.
Yep.
So, I don't know. What else?
What else do we have in the list?
What kind of gear you guys prefer, et cetera, that sort of thing.
Yeah. Let's have some gear talk. We both shoot Canon. Mm-hmm. I have a 5D Mark III. You have a 70D. Mm-hmm. And you used my Mark II for the first time. My old busted leftover body.
I've used a Mark II before.
Yeah.
But yeah, those are nice.
They're very... the full frame and even the shutter actuation feeling that is very different than, I guess, the cheaper quote-unquote bodies.
The 70D, though, has the flip-out LCD.
Oh, yeah.
With a live view that is pretty great.
Yeah, so PAX is unique because I never shot... I'd never had to shoot a PAX before. And watching Kiko shoot PAX is... You realize the shots that you need to get, which are a lot of wide-angle, high-angle... shots down at all these big crowds or like in people's faces as they're like reacting in big groups and stuff to that, which is which is great. But so Kiko is walking around with his camera on a pole on like a timer, just like shooting, and it's like great because he gets the look at whereas I'm like hitting a button, hoisting it, and like being like, oh, please, please, good one. and like just repeat.
But yeah, so it has the 70D has a flip out LCD that can show me exactly what it sees, which is really weird for SLRs. Mm-hmm. So I can raise this thing on the pole and I can see how the shot is framed based on this tiny little LCD.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Did the Mark III not have a flip out screen either?
No.
What?
It's because it's not prosumer. It's Bush League. I'm sure eventually they will. That's maybe.
I feel like there are more bodies.
I don't know. Like the standard now.
They're kind of shrinking the size of bodies with everything going mirrorless too.
Yeah, but they still got the flip out screens.
Yeah,
that's important.
As far as glass, which is tech talk for lenses, but you know that, Josh. You like to buy some glass
all the time.
Yeah. as far as glass goes, my go-to convention lens is probably the 24-70.
That's the go-to lens for 2.8. Everything.
I think it's the best walk-around lens for anything.
Right. It's not.
It's the moneymaker.
It's the easiest to use, but it's not like razor sharp.
Yeah.
It gets the job done.
Yeah, for sure. It covers what you need to do, and then the 70-200 2.8 is super incredible for like the main stage shows.
If you want to be a photographer, you have to own, and you have Canon buys, you have to own both of these lenses.
Yeah, because they kill it. And it sucks because you want to buy the cheaper, significantly cheaper f4, but that 2.8 really helps if you're shooting in dark settings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then as far as everything else goes, we both have a 15 millimeter fisheye. Right.
Which, and that's a lot. Those get a lot of use out of
at shows. At PAX. If you do the right kind of stuff, they do a lot of they do a lot of work. PAX is great because big crowds, they're perfect.
And
Making things seem larger and making things seem more full or more empty if there's not people there.
But even with reaction shots or people doing stuff, you need that fisheye just to get everything into the frame, and especially if they have friends around them.
Yeah.
Like most of the stuff that I catch in console free play of people having a good time, it's usually groups of four and you have to fisheye that.
Yeah. Well,
do you unfisheye that after?
Not really.
Oh,
like it's, I think everyone's used to distortion now.
Yeah. I mean, it looks
they
cool.
Just accept it. I mean, the iPhone is heavy distortion.
Yeah.
And it's just, people don't even notice.
Yeah.
It
I think it can be viewed as like it's viewed as a cool thing now.
Yeah.
But back then it was definitely people would try to fix it as much as possible.
It's just a style choice now. I think.
Yeah.
I mean, I have a 16-35, which is ultra wide angle, not fisheye. And of course there's a lot of distortion. If there's a person on the edges, their face is going to look stretched.
They're all stretched. Mm-hmm.
But that has been killing it recently. It's super, super sharp when it's that wide. That's been my go-to instead of the fisheye at PAX recently.
Well, because you know that I'm getting all the fisheye
stuff. Well, because I know you're always there on the fisheye. But unless you're like shooting like action sports or things we're going to be getting close to the fisheye lens, probably isn't the best for you unless you plan on approaching that style, I guess.
Yeah.
Anything else go to? Like a good prime. If you were to get a camera, the first lens you need is a 50 1.8. It's just straight up.
It's not that expensive.
Yeah, it's cheap.
Usually $100 or less. And you will learn so much and you will understand what we're talking about and you'll understand depth of field and low light.
And 50 millimeters is easy to work with.
Yeah.
I have an 80 millimeter 1.2 and it barely ever gets used.
Well, that's on a crop body.
Yeah.
But still, it's 80 millimeters hard to work with.
Yeah. Yeah, I have an 85 1.8. I think, and
no, I have an. It's an 85-1.2.
Yeah,
it's an
85 millimeter. Yeah,
it's just hard.
Yeah,
like it's great for portraits.
Yeah, I mean that's definitely a portrait lens.
Yeah, and that's not.
But
what
you don't
use for PAX.
You don't use that at PAX.
No,
the only prime.
No, I did.
Use,
I did use it a little bit because they want
cosplay.
They want cosplay shots.
Yeah,
at,
it's good
at
for that.
Australia
or like I use my 24 prime a bit or a 35 prime at PAX for low light, wide stuff, or like really dramatic shots of the stage, they turn out really great there.
The 85 is not great for people that are moving.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah, tracking is pretty bad on that. And then as far as lights go, do you use any flashes during the show? You use a Canon speed light, right?
Yeah, I have two speed lights.
Yeah.
With the softbox, the LumaQuest.
Yeah, I prefer to look for bounce. I do have a softbox just because it doesn't cover the area that I would like it to when it's on camera.
It works great with a fisheye.
Yeah, I imagine that it does there. But out of the pack setting, I use White Lightnings, which are a policy buff who makes alien bees, a light source, which are just flashes, and a series of modifiers, softboxes, and beauty dishes and whatnot. And I think if you are seriously getting into studio style photography or controlled lighting, starting with little strobes, like little Canon speed lights or something, is great, and using remote triggers to fire those, but then switching to like alien bees and then upgrading from there is a great way to go. For those interested, what do you think is the favorite photo you've shot? Not even during PAX, but ever.
It's the PAX one.
It's the...
You know which one it is.
Yeah, I can picture it right now.
It's everyone's favorite.
Okay.
Well, you can describe it.
It's the big daddy and the daughter sitting in the front row.
Yep.
That's like the definitional PAX photo.
Yeah. I remember seeing that one on Flickr and commenting it like before we knew each other really. And you were like, thanks. And I was like, ah. trying to think of mine.
And what's funny is like, it's like,
I do know.
I just happen to be standing there.
Yeah.
Like, it's a cool photo, but how much credit do I get for
how much work
being
did you
at the
do?
Right.
But that's what being a good photographer
I
is.
I know,
right?
But it's like,
but no one
how
else,
much talent is required for
no
that?
One else took that photo. Like,
how much talent
you
is it?
You could have screwed up the photo. You could have screwed up the photo.
Oh, no, I took a lot, and there were a lot of shitty ones.
Well, there you go.
And
I
think
sure
I could
got
have,
it.
I think I could have taken a better one than that one.
Oh, yeah, pretty good.
But like, how much talent does it take to be standing at the right moment at the right exact time and pressing a button?
But some of the best photos come
I know,
from like
it just,
photojournalists,
it just feels
people
weird.
That are like, well, yeah. That's people like going through the shit, like army photographers.
Yeah.
And you kind of give them more credit than I was in the right place and didn't die.
Yeah, and also got this bitchin' photo. But yeah. Like, so much of photography is just. Being at the
you're stealing. You're not doing art. Yeah. Quit lying to yourself. You're not an artist. I can't draw. I can use shapes and push them around a screen, and occasionally move light in the way that looks the coolest. I think my favorite. I love shooting skateboarding so much. It's my favorite thing to shoot because it requires timing, which is fun. But it also is kind of a studio setting because of the way I prefer to shoot it is setting up lights at a location. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like a studio that's outside where timing is key and they're doing a really, really cool thing that not many other people can do.
I initially thought that, like, wouldn't you know, flashing into their faces, wouldn't that be a distraction?
Probably.
But
it's when you're outside and they're focused.
But, I mean, in terms of skateboarding, that's all just muscle memory.
Yeah.
Most of the time, right?
Yeah, you're not, unless it's a night shoot, then I could see where it's a big problem.
Right. Where they actually are blinded for a couple seconds.
Yeah. For the most part, shooting skateboarding in the day, it's a fill flash, really. It's not really going to distract
them
too much.
Them, yeah.
But there was a skateboarder named Jamie Jacobson who lives in Vancouver, Washington. And he was like, hey man, I really want to try this trick where I'm carving over this bowl barefoot. And it's not just a bowl, it's like over this tunnel, I guess this like hole. So it's definitely a gravity 100% on him situation where he had to be horizontal and going super, super fast. And like we get there and he does a few runs and he is one of the best and fastest skaters I've ever seen. So he definitely had it on lock. But seeing this guy go through, like, just dropping in barefoot, well, rolling in barefoot and then carving this bowl and like, just killing it over and over. And I set up a bunch of flashes. I think I had 3 or 4, like one hidden in the bowl, shooting up at him and stuff. And I shot it a few times from one angle and it was okay. But I had so many shadows from the time of day that it was, but the sun started to go down like perfectly. And I like had packed up at that point. It's like, actually, man, let's try it now one more time when I could control 100% of the light, and reshot it. And it was like immediately I was like, this is the shot that I need. This is what I needed. So once I got that and like, I don't know, I think that's probably my favorite one I've shot. And I think it's like framed in my office because I'm dumb and dumb. but I like it a lot. It's great. That one I think it's because it had like a good amount of work behind it.
There's a story there.
Yeah, there's a bit of a story.
Plus it got published a few times in magazines.
So you got any maybe some tips that you guys wouldn't have normally learned that you learned, you know, just being
don't
out
be
there
afraid
doing
of
it.
High ISO.
Oh man,
just fucking embrace it. You know what, grain is great.
Yeah, people love it. People love that grain. I didn't learn anything from teachers. Mm-hmm. I learned almost 100% through messing up and asking people why I was wrong on the internet. And you can learn anything off YouTube these days.
Yeah.
So you should try that. You don't even need a fancy photo school because there are so many people that went to photo school that I'm like, oh, I wonder how their work is. And it's like, oh, really? Oh, no. They're still me when I was 20.
If you want to get into it, just do it a lot. I just don't think they're shooting enough.
Yeah.
Do it a lot.
Just shooting. I mean, it's just like when Krahulik is like, oh, draw every day. that's 100%. And it's just shoot all the time and compare yourself to other photographers, not even your age, because like there are kids now
and
that
like,
just destroy you.
Go to Flickr, like, look at the EXIF data that is posted with bitchin' photos that you like.
Deconstructing photos is huge for me when it comes to lighting, is being like, I'm trying to guess how many lights they're using and all of that. And if you can do that, great. But if you can't, try to see if you can make that shot and then you'll understand what they did differently for the most part. And it's usually not they had a better camera or they had a better lens or anything. It'll just be a lot more is in the hands of light in the way that light is hitting a subject. And it's so hard to convey that that's the most important thing to people that are doing photography. It's just like, look how the light is hitting them. This is the only thing that matters.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And never, ever, ever use the built-in flash.
Yeah, don't ever do that. Even if you do some weird trickery with paper and reflectors, try to make that work. It's not super great. It's almost always better to shoot grainy as hell versus using
and
an on-camera flash.
Just put it on the manual setting and never take it off.
Yeah.
Because you're not going to learn otherwise. Just shoot manual all the time.
A manual flash or manual? Manual
setting on your SLR.
I think
SLR.
Starting on aperture priority is a good way to understand why you have to be within a shutter speed if you're at a certain aperture. Because just watching those numbers change when you're pointing in a dark space versus a light is great to see that. But I think shooting on M is fantastic.
I think just going straight to M.
Straight
because
to M.
when you're set on aperture or on the functionality is stripped.
Yes, but it still gives you the data that you need to see.
I think that tooling with all of the settings will help you learn faster than being restricted because you'll have a bigger picture of how things interact if you're adjusting everything.
Yeah. I mean, in the digital age, I don't see why that's not a problem, why that would be a problem.
I mean, the exposure meter is going to tell you what's working and what isn't.
Yeah. And you should pay attention to that thing.
Yeah.
A lot more than you think you should.
That triangle is going to give you a lot of help.
Yeah. And if you feel, and if your gut tells you that you're probably going to be underexposed, maybe just a notch or two to the left with the shutter, maybe.
Or
learn to breathe.
Or just bump up the ISO.
Yeah, or crank the ISO. Yeah, that's the best part. Learning to breathe like a sniper. It's pretty great. Just snap. Perfect. I started shooting film, I think 5 years ago, maybe 4 years ago. And that is, I think, my favorite to shoot now, which is weird because now I prefer to shoot a bunch and not look at what I took and then see them months later after I get them developed or weeks if I'm impatient. But for the most part, I don't know how that shot came out. And at first it was frustrating when I was trying to make everything work with like my remote triggers and stupid lighting. But as soon as I gave up on that and just shot based on what the meter said, had a great time. So if you're getting stressed out, maybe get some film. Just roll through 12 shots, 24 shots, you're going to love it. That's, you know, if you've been shooting for a while and you're stressed out about it, which I don't know, maybe some people out there.
Any other tips?
No, I think for the most part, people that, if you have any specific questions, asking me on Twitter is totally cool.
Don't buy a kit.
Buying the Best Buy kits is a bad way to do it.
No.
A kit lens is fine to start out with.
Not even really. It teaches you bad habits.
It does, but if you don't have the budget.
Yeah, but you can easily buy a body and just a prime.
Yeah, I guess buying a body and a prime would be better than a kit.
Yeah.
Be cheaper,
especially when you're starting out.
Yeah, it would actually be cheaper to just get a 50 and a body.
Yeah.
I remember my first kit that I bought was like the Best Buy kit, which was like comes with body, shitty lens, shittier telephoto lens, and then bag for a lot more money, and it was not worth it because all those lenses were garbage. And
they're ended up just horrible.
Ended up being sold away or given away.
Yeah, I got this sweet kit with all these stupid attachments that you put on the end.
Yeah.
Fisheye one, the 2x one that make it all look like shit because it's shitty glass.
Oh, man. I had a few of those for a while when I was shooting skateboarding, and I didn't understand the difference between a full frame camera and a non. And I had so many little $30 fisheye attachments that I thought would make me shoot skateboarding photos like the magazines.
Nope.
And there's not a single sharp photo that can be shot through that at all, unless it's dead center. But anything on the edge is just going to look like butts, and you're going to have a horrible vignette. Yuck.
Don't buy cheap shit.
Stop it. Don't do it.
You're just wasting your money.
Yeah. I think you get that type of stuff so much cheaper now, though. I feel like you can buy a fisheye for like an iPhone camera, and it's great. It's for an iPhone camera.
Me.
Let it slide, Keith. Oh,
but if you get a crop body camera, you can get some pretty cool little fish eyes on Russian fish eyes on like eBay and stuff that are cheap.
Sounds scary to me.
Yeah, they work fine. They're good.
Sounds legit.
They're good. They're better than that shitty thing you put on the end.
Yeah, that's true.
Not as good as like the fish eye lens is not expensive either. Like the,
I mean, we're talking in some kid spent $600 on their body. They're not going to buy a $600 fisheye lens.
Especially if it's just the fisheye. Is 15
millimeter fisheye that expensive?
Yeah. 600.
It's been a long time.
That's when I bought it, was 600. It went up and it might have gone down. It might be like 400 now, but I have not checked it out.
That's a cheap lens.
Yeah,
that is
a lot
in the grand scheme of things.
For a trick lens, you know.
In the grand scheme of things, if it doesn't make you money through like good shit that you shoot, it's going to be hard. And that's, of course, if you're trying to do that. I don't know. I think my most difficult challenge was shooting landscapes because my favorite thing to shoot is people and controlling everything. Whereas landscapes, the thing that controls you is the time you wake up in the goddamn morning to be ready for a sunrise. Because you realize that the people that take really, really good landscapes are there and they've been camping at a spot for 3 days just to get the perfect sunrise that hits the top of the mountain and stuff like that. So props to those people, but
they just don't do it for me.
Yeah, it's not my style.
They're not interesting to me.
I think some of them are really great.
Oh yeah, no, I think some of them are great. I have no interest in making
photos. Yeah, I definitely don't have interest in that. But if you do, you probably found a lot of the lighting talk super boring because that's a completely different thing. You're more into tripod talk and and remote releases. Exciting.
Sweet.
Yeah.
What is your favorite thing to shoot?
Definitely people, but skateboarding.
People doing what?
People skateboarding is my favorite thing to shoot. I think action sports, but skateboarding specifically because I know all the lingo and the way that they will be facing when they do a trick without having to. And I understand the timing of when the tricks look best, I guess. And I think that's cool. And I think that the best skateboard photographers are skateboarders themselves, just because I think you have to go through all that.
Yeah.
And all the names that I can think of are like people that can at least kickflip. So that's pretty cool. I think snowboarding would be fun if it weren't so difficult to like, you get one chance essentially. And like the lighting situation is always great because you have like, you always have the best reflected light and everything looks clear.
Bouncing
always
off the floor.
But you have to lug a backpack, which you might eat shit and tumble that out everywhere into the snow, which is just going to ruin everything. But then it's like you're cold as shit and you're just like, I watched a friend do it and I was like, I don't envy you in any way, but that shot is cool. Where it's just they had to, you know, go first, set up, like call up to their friends to like hit this jump. Then they got one shot because then pack everything up and ride the hill again and then do it again and again. But it's just like you have to hit the chair. So your shots are like you get one every 30 minutes. It's pretty crazy. You definitely learn that that's not what you want to do when you're out there. It definitely it takes away from, I mean, if that is as fun as snowboarding to you, then go for it. But I like doing high concept photo manipulation stuff, and I did some of that for PAR, and that was super fun, Penny Arcade Report. But I haven't had a chance recently, and we're reshooting the Penny Arcade store right now, and that's not hilarious, but it's a lot of controlled lighting, which I like getting into. I actually like setting it up, but now that it's already there and set up and I've shot 400 items, I think I'm ready to be done. Kiko, what about you? What's your favorite thing to shoot? Is it PAX? Is it cosplay?
The most interesting thing, I like, obviously you want to shoot things that are interesting.
Yeah. Do you usually your interests?
It's super creepo.
Oh,
but
you have to qualifier.
It is. But it made the most interesting photos.
Okay.
So when we went back to Japan in 2005,
upskirt, I see where you're going. It
gross.
Is creepy.
You're yeah. gross.
Okay.
So there's a, I forget where it is exactly, but it's Yoyogi Park. It's where the cosplayers and the fashion kids get dressed up and hang out on a bridge.
Oh, yeah. I think I've seen that in photos.
I really enjoyed taking photos of them when they were not posing.
No, that's not creepy.
No, it's totally creepy.
That's legit.
Yeah, it's just like taking pictures and walking down the street, you know? It's not creepy.
There was more story there on what they were doing when they weren't posing.
Yeah, you're just taking pictures of people hanging out, basically.
I think that's way seeing, more interesting than the posed shots.
Right.
Of people,
seeing them
like fashion
fully
people.
Dressed up, looking at their cell phone.
Yeah.
Just living life.
Yeah.
Rather than...
That's a cool story. That's like a photojournalism type approach to like fashion or cosplay photography. And I think that's cool. You should
so
do that.
Those were my favorite things to shoot.
You should start a Tumblr.
No. So every now and then, that's what I like to shoot at PAX.
Yeah. That's the best, though.
The cosplay.
Cosplayers playing
video games.
It's so good.
Yeah. Because it's a weird juxtaposition.
Yeah.
Because they're not hamming it up or constructing these elaborate poses for these photographs. They're just doing their thing.
What was that photo we were fighting over at PAX South? Was it Dad Mario and baby, like a little kid Luigi playing like
no,
a
it was, 3DS? No, that was at Australia.
Okay, yeah.
Kid Luigi playing on a 3DS.
Yeah. That was great. Instant photos.
We were both like jockeying to get that shot.
I was in the background of yours, you were in the background of mine. It was like that situation as we saw it at the same time. And it's like, oh, I need to be the famous one to do that.
So that photojournalism style, but with the added interesting thing that they're fucking fully cosplayed.
Yeah. That's good. I think the perfect accidents that happen at PAX, like someone dressed up as Ezio playing the new Assassin's Creed. That was great. Or like Zelda playing the new Link's Adventures, stuff like that. Like I think when they're on brand, it's really great. That's super fun. And not post. Post is the worst. Post convention photos make me sad.
The thing is, I know what we need.
Yeah.
In terms of pack shots. And it'd be so easy if I just told people to just pose so I could get the shot that I needed. But it feels so gross.
Yeah. And then they're like, I am having fun. This is a fun face. And then he started looking like a Nintendo Power situation. Oof. You know what I'm talking about.
Oh, also cosplayers doing Dance Central.
Yeah. That's
great shots.
One. That's a good one. Dance Central is pretty great for photos. Rock Band, decent as well. Fine.
We need more action.
People that are really into it, not the people that stare blank face.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry, we got into a talk there.
All right.
Josh,
anything else?
You want to wrap this up for us?
Sure. If you guys have any questions or topics you would like us to discuss, please email podcast@penny-arcade.com.
Thanks, guys.